The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, the News and Observer, and the Washington Post. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. If you've been following the news lately, no doubt you have heard about recent developments in artificial intelligence, also known as AI. Well, on today's Armchair Traveler, we'll begin our journey with In Milan Putting an AI Travel Advisor to the Test. Writer Jalon Yiggins' article appeared in the June 13, 2023 issue of the New York Times. Now, we'll be reading an updated version that she posted on the Times website on June 14th. And what we'll do is begin with some editor subheads to give you an overview. On her first visit to the northern Italian city, referring to Milan, our reporter compares the itineraries of two travel advisors, one virtual, the other human, and here's what she found. And we begin the article. I wasn't exactly sure what to expect from the itinerary my travel advisor had put together in a mere 5 seconds when I arrived in Milan's central Piazza del Duomo. The cathedral glistening under the midday sun, I anticipated being swept into the city's frenetic rhythm. Instead, I found myself in the middle of a relatively empty square, surrounded by shuttered stores and cafes. "Why didn't you tell me today was a public holiday in Milan?" I texted my advisor. "I'm sorry, I didn't realize that you were planning to visit Milan on May 1st," the advisor responded. As a virtual travel assistant, I try to provide as much information as possible, but sometimes I miss something. I apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused you. I felt bad, as if I had hurt someone's feelings, and had to remind myself that I wasn't talking to a human. It was my first trip to Milan, and I was using the opportunity to try out the beta version of Expedia's travel planning chatbox powered by ChatGPT. Travel companies are already using artificial intelligence to help with customer service and bookings, but now services like Kayak and Expedia are experimenting with AI assistance to help people find places to go and stay. I decided to put Expedia's service to the test by comparing its itinerary with one prepared by a human advisor. "I have one day to visit Milan. Where should I go?" I asked it. "What should I see?" The virtual itinerary. Perhaps my expectations were too high to expect the AI assistant to know what my plans my plans coincided with the national holiday. I apologized for snapping and asked it to recommend a nearby lunch spot that was open. It suggested Galleria, a restaurant at the Gran Galleria Vittorio Emanuele II shopping arcade, which was already on my ChatGPT-generated itinerary. The stunning, glass-covered 19th-century complex is a Milan landmark, filled with luxury boutiques and restaurants. Did I need a reservation? My travel assistant recommended one, but since the restaurant was a short walk away, I decided to try my luck. When I arrived, there was a long line of tourists eyeing the wood-fired pizzas and colorful pasta plates on the outside tables. I checked in with the host and asked if there was a table for one. Immediately, a waiter motioned for me to follow him inside, where he pulled up a chair next to a cozy corner spot. At a nearby table, an American couple scrolled through their phones looking for a place to have dinner, even before they had finished lunch. There's a traditional Milanese restaurant close to the hotel, but it has mixed reviews, the woman told her partner. At that moment, I was grateful that my AI guide had already narrowed down my dinner options and spared me the burden of having to wade through these endless possibilities presented by Google. It also allowed me to put down my phone and soak in the atmosphere as I enjoyed my delicious spicy salami pizza and a glass of the house Chianti Classico wine. After window shopping in the Scala area, it was time to climb the Duomo del Milano, Milan's main attraction, a cathedral for renowned expansive rooftop with its intricate Gothic-style stone spires and gargoyles, and stunning views of the city against the backdrop of the snow-capped Alps. But when I got there, I hit another long line, and after such a heavy lunch, I didn't have the patience to wait. So I moved on to the next stop, Pinacoteca de Brera Art Museum. But when I checked the opening hours through Google, it appeared to be closed for the holiday. It was too early to try the aperitivo spots that followed on my list, so I asked ChatGPT to show me a few of Milan's hidden gems. It came up with several options, including the Porta Ticinese, which is described as a trendy area with vintage shops, street art, and lively nightlife. But I was itching to see some art and history and opted for another ChatGPT suggestion, the San Maurizio al Monasterio Maggiore, a church filled with stunning, vividly painted frescoes that depict stories of saints and scenes from the Bible. There were no lines, and it was a peaceful way to wind down the day before the traditional and delicious Milanese veal chop dinner that awaited at La Canda alla Scala, the final stop on my virtual assistant's itinerary. I had asked ChatGPT to recommend a mid-range boutique hotel for the night, and it provided four options, each one with a one-sentence description. Normally, I would carry out extensive research before booking a hotel room, reading reviews, and asking local friends for recommendations, but this was, after all, an experiment. So I put my trust in the travel assistant and opted on my first night for the Hotel Milano Scala, which ChatGPT described as a boutique hotel with a focus on sustainability and wellness. The hotel had a convenient central location within walking distance of many major attractions. The staff was friendly, and the room was comfortable and clean, claiming to have excellent indoor air quality provided by a filtration system. But despite being a small boutique hotel, it felt overrun by tourists, particularly at breakfast when groups arrived in the dining room at the same time. Now the human touch. In contrast, the La Canda Pendennis, where I stayed the second night on the recommendation of Francesca Basso, a Milan-based travel designer for Dreamsteam Exclusive Travel, a member of the Luxury Virtuoso Network, felt more like staying in a home than a hotel, with just four bedrooms reached by a small staircase above a restaurant. It was calm and cozy and felt cut off from the bustle of the city, despite its central location in the charming Brera neighborhood full of boutiques, art galleries, and restaurants. The Duomo was only 10 minutes away. Luckily, I had a second opportunity to visit it because, unlike my virtual travel assistant, Ms. Basso had sent me a link to pre-book my tickets. Earlier, when I asked the AI assistant if it had the capability to book ahead, it referred me to the Expedia app. With advanced tickets, I was able to spend more than an hour admiring the cathedral's stunning stained glass windows and archaeological ruins, rather than being stuck in line. In general, Ms. Basso's itinerary was easier to follow, as each stop was a short distance from the next, allowing more time to explore the sites. She also marked out places to visit en route to the different sites, like the Villa Invernizzi, a mansion with a garden that is home to a flamboyance of pink flamingos. She also made sure to take me off the beaten path, sending me on a 25-minute walk outside the touristy city center to Leonardo da Vinci's vineyard. While most visitors to Milan line up to see the artist's mural, The Last Supper, few venture out to the 15th-century private Milanese residence tucked away in the lush gardens of Casa degli Attilani. I sat in the garden in front of Leonardo's original vine stock and was transported to the Renaissance as I listened to an audio guide about the property and legends involving the artist. By the time I finished, it was the golden hour, and I headed to the canals of the Navigli district for an aperitivo, the Italian tradition of a pre-dinner drink with a small bite. Here I reflected on my trip and how the two itineraries measured up. Miss Basso's service no doubt felt more tailored, highlighting the importance of human interaction. Before sending me her suggestion, she asked me specific questions about my preferences, and I trusted her guidance, knowing she was experienced and a local. While my AI assistant was equipped with an expansive database and programmed to think and respond like a human, I didn't completely trust its judgment and at times felt compelled to do my own research. ChatGPT only has access to information up to 2021, and a lot has changed in the travel industry since then. Still, I thought my assistant struck a good balance between suggesting must-see landmarks and lesser-known parts of the city. The key was to frame the questions as directly as possible. I also appreciated how it responded instantly and was available around the clock. A friend's travel advice. Still, no travel experience is complete without the recommendation of a local friend. Mine sent me a list of places including Casa Atalani, Museo Poldi Pezzoli, and Villa Nici Campiglio that wasn't featured on either of my advisor's itineraries. But with limited time before my train home, I only had time to visit one. I chose his lunch recommendation. Rita and Antonio on Via Giacomo Puccini had the vibe of a traditional establishment with delicious food at reasonable prices. I was feeling adventurous and asked the waiter to pick a dish. Within minutes, he was back with a giant plate of steaming seafood pasta that he placed on the table with a grin. "You will like this," he said, and he was right. It was truly delicious, a taste of authentic Italy. And Jalon Jensu, by the way, as you've already seen, is a travel reporter and was previously a correspondent for the international desk in Britain and Turkey for the New York Times. She's covered politics, social justice, the migrant crisis, the Kurdish conflict, and the rise of the Islamic State extremism in Syria and the region surrounding. So there you go. A very interesting article by a very seasoned repro there, traveler and reporter, huh? Well, let's leave Italy and our AI travel advisor and head west to Iowa. And we're going to learn more about a new documentary about RAGBRAI. RAGBRAI is how I'll pronounce it, just to shorten things. Now, this stands for Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. Now, Register is the sponsor, the Des Moines, Iowa local newspaper. We start with a headline and a caption of a photo accompanying the article that appeared in the June 7th, 2023 issue of the Chicago Tribune and also online, the online edition of the News and Observer. And it says it has RAGBRAI, again, RAGBRAI, is an annual bike ride across Iowa. And this documentary shows what it means to those who ride it. And Lance Armstrong is in the photo accompanying the article. He's in the center, posing for photographs and greeted by well-wishers before departing at the start of the third day of the RAGBRAI en route to West Des Moines. And this was on July 23, 2013, in Perry, Iowa. And so let's move on now and see what we can learn. Dateline, Chicago. They ride and ride and then ride some more, tens of thousands of them, all ages, sizes, and shapes. They ride across Iowa every year in the summer heat. They have been doing this for decades. Participants in RAGBRAI, or RAGBRAI, a cumbersome acronym that stands for a joyful annual event, formerly known as the Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. This is the largest bike riding or bike touring event in the world. The oldest and the longest, too. Some have been doing this for years, and some will be doing it again in July, and some of them powerfully pepper. Shift the RAGBRAI documentary, a compelling and a polished new one-hour film that is at once once entertaining and enlightening. It is the work of many people from the Des Moines Register newspaper, primarily two energetic young staff members named Courtney Crowder and Kelsey Kramer. You may recognize Crowder's name, a native of Glenview, Illinois. She was once a bright byline in the Chicago Tribune. And from about 2010 to 2015, she wrote hundreds of stories for the Chicago Tribune, most of them focused on celebrities. She was drawn west to a position at the Register with the promise that she would be able to realize her lofty ambition, which was, she says, with typical enthusiasm, to change the world by writing long-form stories about people. She has done so after spending her first months at the paper detailing the television antics of Iowa farmer Chris Sewells, who starred in the 19th season of The Bachelor and later got in some serious trouble back in Iowa for leaving the scene of a fatal traffic accident. She then wrote about the 2016 presidential caucus cycle, the struggles and triumphs of transgender Iowans, murder, sexual assault, and other criminal matters, and various social issues and causes. She did such fine work that in June 2018, she was named the paper's Iowa columnist, only the fifth since World War II, and was the first woman so designated. The paper's executive editor, Carol Hunter, wrote at the time that I'm betting her fresh perspective will prove illuminating. That's a fine word, illuminating, to attach to shift. Though Crowder had been covering the event for some years, when photo editor Kremer suggested to her in early 2021 that it might make a documentary, the pair got to work. I had met so many writers and heard so many compelling stories that I knew I might be able to get to the heart of the matter, find answers to the "why are you doing this" question, Crowder says. Their film gives us a short look back, traveling to the ride's origins in 1973, when a pair of clever register writers named John Karras and Don Call gave birth to the event. They were both serious bike riders, and they ginned up this idea to ride across the state and have the paper pay for the endeavor, Crowder says. Thus, they did become the Woodward and Bernstein of the bike world. They understood, as I believe, that Iowa is best told by traveling the roads and the town's main streets and meeting and talking to people eye to eye, Crowder says. The first ride attracted some 200 other bikers, and it grew larger and larger. It has been and remains a seven-day-long event covering 450 miles, with various towns hosting riders for overnight stays. Of course, not all riders tackle the entire course, and naturally, many of them are doing it for the fun of it all, riding and partying with friends and strangers. It is on one level sort of like a rolling carnival, Crowder says, but there is a deeper meaning to be found. In advance of last year's ride, she interviewed at least some 40 participants, and interviewed them at length, as a matter of fact, and decided to focus on a smaller number, and they wound up with stories that shine, people who shared themselves. We meet Andrew Boddicker and Ian Zarin, two gay men who grew up in rural America and, after living big city lives elsewhere, returned to the small Iowa town of Lansing, where they found one another, fell in love, and have crafted fulfilling lives as school music teachers, community leaders, and are as happy as they can be. There's a woman named Tori Giffen, who first wrote as a single woman in her 30s. When she returned decades later, she had been married, divorced, and was accompanied by the youngest of her three children, who had been given a chilling cancer diagnosis. When the little boy becomes the target of nasty invective, Giffen fights back with cool courage, which compels others to leap in with encouragements and kindness. There's wildly bearded and passionate Adam Limeberry, riding with his 9-year-old son Liam, and talking frankly of how he became addicted to drugs as a teen and of his struggle out of that dark pit. He rides in Iowa and elsewhere in the country to raise money to build a rehab center, at one point saying he considers riding freedom on wheels. A black woman named Dana Chandler lost her husband when they were young partners to a freak car accident. With three young children, she started biking as a way to heal. A Des Moines schools counselor on the cusp of retirement, she has become determined to, as she tells Crowder, to put more black butts on bikes. Toward that end, she has started a chapter of Black Girls Do Bike. Working with 10 colleagues, Crowder and Kremer, who traversed the course by car, wound up with some 70 hours of film. In the artfully edited final version, you get a sense of the excitement of the ride, also the stunning landscape, which one writer calls a canvas of what God has made for you. With the energetic backing of editor Hunter, the film and accompanying stories became the paper's major project for this year. Made on a $30,000 shoestring budget, the film premiered at Des Moines Varsity Cinema in early May. Crowder and Kremer were on the hunt for more screens, and they deserved to find them. So far planned is a July 16th screening in Crystal Lake, Illinois. And that's just before this year's 50th RAGBRAI, RAGBRAI, which takes off on July 22nd from Iowa's Sioux City and ends in Davenport on July 29th. So as you listen to this program, it began yesterday, if you're listening on the Monday version, and it will continue on to the end of the week. Now, Crowder, again, will be writing about this year's ride. It's her job, but also she and her husband, Southside native Scott Graca, who works as a data analyst, have fallen hard for Iowa, all of Iowa. Chicago will always have my heart, she says. This was a big move for both of us, but we have been able to discover our real selves here and have come to know that in this world there is more that connects us than divides us. So, I'm going to look forward to maybe another article about Ragbri. We'll have to see, right? Well, you may be familiar with the name Harper's Ferry, and especially anyone who has studied American history and is at least somewhat familiar with the famed abolitionist figure John Brown. That said, our journey now moves to this headline. Want to escape D.C. without a car? Take a train to Harper's Ferry. Now, we're going to hop aboard as we join writer John Besh on the MARC train to West Virginia, a gateway to a weekend getaway full of history, hiking, and local beer. His article appeared in the April 15, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. The D.C. doldrums are real. If it feels like you need to buy a week from pub crawls on the hill and the thought of cherry blossoms in peak bloom makes you squirm, it's time to get out of town. No driver's license, no desire to board a megabus, no problem. If you look west, you'll see an opportunity for a car-free weekend that won't cost as much as a trip to New York or rack up a tab at beach bars. Maryland's MARC train, an unsung hero of the local transit network, can spirit you away to Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, in less than 2 hours. You won't be just lowering your carbon footprint. You'll enjoy the scenery by rail as you take in what Thomas Jefferson called one of the most stupendous scenes in nature in his notes on the state of Virginia. When you wake up in this quaint Appalachian hamlet, shopkeepers dusting off antebellum storefronts will send you down the hill to a coffee shop with a message to give to the owner. Be prepared to say that so-and-so sent you. Visitors to Harper's Ferry get the impression that the whole town communicates like this. It's hard to do Harper's Ferry wrong, but you'll inch closer to right the more accurately you can summarize John Brown's armory raid by heart. Read the facts back to yourself over a hearty vegan stew and with new friends on their day off from hiking the length of the Appalachian Trail. How to get to Harper's Ferry by train. MARC's Brunswick line is a tailor-made for a weekend getaway that won't break the bank. Round-trip tickets only set you back $26. Members of the 9-to-5 crowd can bring their weekend bags to work on Friday as your train to Martinsburg, West Virginia, departs from Union Station at 4:25, 5:40, or if you want to kick off your weekend with a pre-train pint at the Dubliner, try 6:20 p.m. Now, feel free to scoff at the 12 lanes of I-270 traffic you'll speed past as the train charges from suburbia to the cornfields of Montgomery County. In just over an hour and a half, you'll coast over one of the B&O bridges comprising a 15-acre National Historic Site into West Virginia. The 6:53 a.m. train on Monday will get you to D.C. by 8:32 a.m., and that's just in time for work. Now, here are some tips that John Besh offers on if you want to take this little scenic adventure to Harper's Ferry. And first, he begins with where to stay. The concept of the true bed and breakfast stands out as a nostalgic in a world of Airbnbs, he writes. As a weekender, you'll have your choice of 19th century or older lodging perched on the hills of Lower Town. Most B&Bs offer themed rooms ripped straight from a romantic comedy. Whether you stay in the Gray Room at the Stone House or the 1820 suite at the Town's End, you're almost guaranteed a sturdy breakfast and an unobstructed view of the morning fog spilling onto the Potomac and the Shenandoah. The farther up Washington Street you stay, the farther uphill you'll have to walk. B&Bs closer to Lower Town are your best bet if you're looking to stay close to the main attractions. Let's talk more about the Town's End. Innkeeper Karen Townsend, the homophony not lost on her, first fell in love with the Harper's Ferry in 2007. "I mean to come on," she says, arms flailing back, the two rivers she finds so magnificent. Townsend, an ESL teacher, that's English as a second language, has done stints everywhere from Salzburg to Abu Dhabi. She says the Harper's Ferry is her favorite place on earth, and she wants to emulate hominess she saw at backpackers' lodges in the Austrian Alps. Townsend is 73 and particularly enjoys sitting in a rocking chair chatting with her employees and the backpacker she now gets to host herself. Whether you stay there or not, feel free to visit Townsend at the Town's End for a trail snack, a cup of tea, and a couple of hours of reminiscence. Then we have the Stonehouse B&B. Now, note the website describes it has no minced words as a doily-free environment. There are a handful of rooms in the historical center of town, starting at $175 a night on the weekends, and it's at 156 High Street. Next is the Carriage House at Carrot Top Cottage. If an Airbnb is more your style, this cozy, cost-effective one is a little more than $100 a night. The one-bed, one-bath cottage is located in Harpers Ferry National Historic Park and even has a pawpaw tree, the secret fruit that makes September in Washington so sweet. Well, what to do in Harpers Ferry? Harpers Ferry is a good litmus test for whether you're more of an active trip type or a leisurely vacation person. There's lots to do if you want to work your way through the brochures at the visitor center, but you can also watch others take on the rafting trips and museum hopping while you just relax and shop. We do have the John Brown Museum to visit. Harpers Ferry is like a colonial Williamsburg for Civil War buffs. This historical center is impeccably restored and maintained to reflect how it looked at the time of abolitionist John Brown's 1859 armory raid. Visitors struggling to picture can visit the National Park Service's John Brown Museum. It tells the story of the raid with help from interactive exhibits in the lower town. You can also hike the Appalachian Trail. You should also go for a hike in that trail. Walk across the bridge to the Maryland Heights, where you can continue onward or pivot to one of the most beautiful stretches of the C&O Canal Trail. You can also visit Tony the Cat. Formerly titled Tony the Kitty Cat, per his pen on Google Maps, Tony is an unofficial ambassador of sorts, a recipient of rave reviews from tourists. This black tabby will gladly accept head rubs along Washington Street. And where to shop in Harpers Ferry? As an unwritten rule, a small town's charm is measured in proportion with the quirkiness of its shops, and oh, does Harpers Ferry have that in spades. The steep inclines on the streets slow you down and heighten the intimacy. Pack light, a day of playing telephone in Harpers Ferry will leave you with a funky new wardrobe and a Rolodex of local artisans to visit on your next trip. Stores like the Teso Tecarica, the Vintage Lady, and the Gilded Flea offer exactly what you're imagining and more, all within a short walk of the post office where you can mail your vintage cards. Then we have the Vintage Lady. Manager Crystal Grimsley welcomes Vintage Lady visitors in a sing-song voice between stitching together her needlepoint du jour. Grimsley has been a fixture among Harpers Ferry's vintage vendors for 13 years, proud to meddle Mountain State charms, running the gamut from local wines to statuettes fashioned from soft West Virginia coal. Then there's Magpie Pottery. Just across the way, Magpie Pottery offers a step back in time. Joe Straka, whose Czech last name translates to magpie, has been making pottery in these historic digs on Public Way for over 5 years, hailing from an area just north of Scranton, Pennsylvania, which he says is not unlike Harpers Ferry. Straka feels comfortable in his shop. I find so many birds in different cloud situations and fog and snow and ice and stuff that'll blow your mind, Straka says of his stirring environs. And as far as places to eat, there's Kelly's Farm Kitchen. It's an all-vegan spot. Then Snallygaster's Cafe and Wine Bar, Rabbit Hole Gastro Pub, and Harpers Ferry Brewing. And another one, I love this one, Almost Heaven Pub and Grill. And then the Boulevard Bread Bakery. There we go. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's visit to Harpers Ferry and other locales. Hope you've enjoyed this version of Armchair Traveler and that you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Any comments or questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. I'll give the number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.